Mexico Star Theater. The more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast welcome you to an hour of mirth and melody with Fred Allen, Kenny Baker, Portland Hoffa, the Martins, and Al Goodman's orchestra. It's Texaco time.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you that
merchant of merriment,
that
lovable buffoon,
that
one and only Fred
Allen
in
person.
Thank you. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Say, now look, Jimmy, before we start, I always have trouble with you here right at the beginning of the program. Now, what was this tonight? That composite introduction. Who were those people?
Oh, just a gang I picked up to help with the opening announcement.
You mean I am paying that migratory ensemble?
Yes. You owe them $3 apiece, Mr. Allen.
Oh, I do. Well, who told you to...
Well, I did it for you, Fred. You know, the old hoorah buildup. It makes the show sound big.
And here he is, Fred Allen, in person.
Now, wait a minute, Kenny. Wait a minute. Now, what is this?
I missed it, huh? Yeah. Don't I get my $3?
Kenny, you were supposed to be in on that mass announcement.
Yeah, I was an end man.
Well, you certainly were at the wrong end, I might say. But I am surprised at you, Kenny Baker, a singer with your reputation, stooping to group hawking to pick up a paltry $3.
Well, it's your fault, F.A.
My fault? How?
Last week, you made me make a resolution not to take a raise this year.
So?
I gotta pick up a little chicken feed some way.
The tenor is jesting.
The tenor is hungry.
Well, all right, Kenny. If you want $3 so badly, I tell you what I'll do. I'll give you a chance to earn it. Now, there's a spot for you. There's a spot for you in the sketch tonight, if you can act.
If I can act? Why, they used to call me the Orson Welles of the Boy Scouts Drama and Wigwag Club.
They did? The Boy Scouts Drama and Wigwag Club, huh? Well, what plays were you ever in?
Mostly Shakespeare stuff. You know, Merchant of Venice, All's Well That Ends Much Ado About.
Well, I know, but that's a different type of acting. That's all light miming, Kenny. Now, the acting in this sketch tonight runs the gamut of emotion.
Oh, I can do it, F.A. I'll give you an audition.
Well, all right, then. Now, look, here's a line from the sketch. You are supposed to be a cowboy, and you meet another cowboy, you know, just riding along. You meet this other cowboy, and you say, I just rode in from Tombstone Gulch. Now, read it.
I just rode in from Tombstone Gulch.
Very good. Now, we'll try it a little in a little different way. Now, let's say we want to test your emotional capacity here. Now, let's say there has been a killing in Tombstone Gulch. You run 200 miles into town. You stagger up to the sheriff to report this killing. How do you read the line?
I just rode in from Tombstone Gulch, Sheriff.
Not quite after running 200 miles, Kenny. Now, look, try and put something into it this time. We'll make it even more dramatic. You are mortally wounded. An Indian has looked out from behind the totem pole and shot you through the heart with a poison dart. Your dying words are...
I just rode in from Tombstone Gulch, Sheriff.
No, Kenny, you won't do, I'm afraid.
Well, how about if I use a dialect, F.A.? I'm great on Spanish.
Well, maybe that will help, Kenny. Now, let's have that same line in Spanish dialect.
I just rode in from Tombstone Gulch, senor.
Very, very good. Words cannot describe how I feel about your reading. And as we leave Kenny to perfect his dramatic technique, we turn with relief to the latest news of the week. The Texaco News presents its highlight from the world of news. New York City, New York. Worst fog in New York City history blankets the city for 4 days, slowing down highway traffic, endangering navigation, and causing an estimated $1 million loss to airlines. To check on effects of fog in local area, Texaco News interviews several fog victims to bring you their unusual stories. First, however, let us hear from weather expert Fielding Slush. What branch of weather service do you specialize in, Fielding?
Well, I'm on the staff of a certain soft drink company.
In what capacity?
I am vice president in full charge of barometric prognostication.
But what does a soft drink company need with a weather expert?
Well, have you seen the big Coca-Cola sign at 60th Street? You know, the one that forecasts the weather?
Oh, yes. The neon lights up at night, fair, cold, rain, warmer, like that.
Well, I am the man behind that neon.
You must be cramped for space when you get there. Well, tell me, Fielding, did this recent fog bother your Coca-Cola sign?
Oh, the fog was terrible. No one could read my prognostication on the sign on account of the fog.
What did your sign say?
Fog.
Really? No one could read it? Well, what a dilemma. What did you do?
What did I do? For 4 days, I sat up on top of that sign yelling, "Yoo-hoo, fog! Yoo-hoo, fog! Yoo-hoo, fog!"
Brilliant strategy, I must say. Now, as a weather expert, Fielding, what would you say caused this intense fog?
Well, the new Congress convened last week.
Yes?
Congress is always in a fog, you know.
Oh, and you think?
Somebody must have left the door open, and that fog got out.
You are a Republican, if I have ever seen one. And I passed through Vermont as a boy, and thank you, Fielding Slush. A man who had a most unusual experience in the fog was Captain Narcissus Bilge. Captain, what is your craft?
I'm skipper of the SS Dolly Dombrowski.
Out of Santo Domingo to New York?
Out of Weehawken to 42nd Street.
The Dolly Dombrowski is...
The Weehawken Ferry.
I see.
I'm running them commuter cruises on the half hour.
Oh, I see. Well, what about this fog, Captain?
I've been sailing the Hudson River crosswise for 40 years. And blow me down, I never seen nothing like it.
What happened?
Well, Tuesday morning, I'm docked in Weehawken.
Uh-huh.
I'm up on a bridge. It's just rung 8 bells. I'm trying to figure out what time it is.
Yeah?
Well, the mate comes running up. He says it's a heavy fog, Captain, off a Stafford.
A pea super, huh?
Oh, this was a pea super with croutons in it. I can't see the wheel, and I got it in me hand.
And in this terrible fog, you sailed for New York regardless?
What can I do? It's a tradition of the sea. I gotta make 42nd Street.
What if you couldn't see anything?
I'm sailing from memory. I set me course. I ought to be there in 12 minutes.
Yes?
The Dolly Dombrowski's creeping along. I'm blowing a foghorn. I'm watching a clock.
Yes?
At the end of 12 minutes, if I feel a bump, I'll know it's 42nd Street.
And?
The 12 minutes is up. I don't feel no bump.
Yes?
14 minutes. I don't feel no bump. The Dolly Dombrowski's creeping along.
Yes?
17 minutes. I don't feel no bump.
What did you do?
I pulled tree blasts on me foghorn.
Yes?
And I hear a voice yell, "Hey, you, pull over to the kite." It's a mounted cop.
A mounted cop in the Hudson River?
What river? The Dolly Dombrowski's at the corner of 33rd and Broadway.
Well, what did you...
The cop says, "What are you doing with this frigate in traffic?" He's fixing to give me a ticket.
Uh-huh.
I think fast. I talk him out of it.
Well, how could you account for being in the middle of Broadway in a ferry boat?
I says to the cop, "Which way did the Macy Parade go?"
And the cop?
He says, "They went that way. What captured?"
A stroke. And thank you, Captain. A young lady who lost her job on account of the fog was Sappho McGuire. What was your job, Sappho?
I was hostess at Coconut Charlie's.
Coconut Charlie's? What is that?
It's like Sloppy Joe's, only with coconuts.
Oh. It's one of those open-air drink emporia.
Yeah, I'd slink around a counter wearing a sarong.
And what were your duties?
When a customer come in, I'd slink over, give him a glass of coconut milk.
Yeah?
Then I'd take me mallet, whap open the coconut, and pass him the inside. It's got vitamins in it.
Really? Well, tell me, what about the fog?
Well, it's a busy day. I'm slinking and passing and whapping, going along like always.
Uh-huh.
All of a sudden, it's foggy. I can't see nothing.
Well, did it slow up business?
Nah. Voices is coming out of the fog. I'm slinking and passing out coconut milk.
Yeah?
Then I'm stealing around on the counter, whapping a coconut, handing out the inside. And all the time, the fog keeps getting worse. Then it happens.
Then what happens?
Well, I'm slinking and whapping and passing. I rolls out a coconut.
Yeah?
I can't see it in the fog, but it feels like a beauty. The hair is long and silky.
Uh-huh.
I pick up me mallet and whap it. Bang! There's a thud. I light a match, and what's on the floor?
What?
Coconut Charlie. He's out like a light.
You mean his head?
Charlie's coconut was on the counter, and I whapped it.
And you got fired?
Yeah.
Well, what are you doing today?
I'm with a burlesque show. The work is easier.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, I'm still slinking, but I ain't whapping and passing.
Watch out for my coconut on the runway. And thank you, Sappho McGuire. A gentleman who had a most unique experience in the recent fog was Mott Murtry. You had a difficult time in the fog, Mott.
Don't mention fog to me.
Well, why not?
I got pneumonia, chill, blame, beat up, and a $10 fine.
Out of the fog?
Wasn't out of a clear sky, brother.
Well, how did it happen?
Well, confidentially, I'm a dipsomaniac.
Well, you don't look like a drinking man, Mott.
Well, I fool everybody. It's because I don't stagger, and I ain't got no veins in me nose.
No veins in your nose?
No. They must have give up and went back into me head.
No doubt. Well, you seem sober now.
Oh, yeah. I spent last week in a Turkish bath in the steam room.
But what about this fog dilemma of yours?
Well, I wake up Wednesday morning. My mouth tastes like a camel just took his foot out of it.
And your head?
My head feels like somebody's playing badminton in there with cannonballs.
You were still in the steam room.
Yeah, I can't see nothing. I put on my sheet. I start groping for a towel.
Yeah?
I keep walking through the steam, groping. I don't feel no towel. Seems like I'm walking for miles.
Yeah?
Finally, I feel a towel. I start wiping my face. The next thing I know, sheet and all, boom, I'm in the patrol.
Arrested? Why?
Yeah, the door of the Turkish bath must have been open. With the steam and the fog, I couldn't tell the difference.
And when they picked you up?
I'm out in Times Square with a sheet on, wiping my face on the back of a traffic cop's coat.
What did the judge give you?
$10 fine.
For stealing the sheet?
No, for impersonating Mahatma Gandhi.
Thank you a lot, Mott Murtry. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Kenny Baker, a young man who is always in a fog, emerges from it long enough to sing for you, "You Walk By."
and dim the sunlight's gleam. You speak words and shame the birds that sing. Your smile is softer than the touch of spring. You walk by and children pause at play. You walk by, December seems like May. Heaven is right here and not above when you walk by, my love. Magicians can make things disappear or pull a rabbit out of a hat, but your loveliness, my dear, does greater things than that. You walk by and children pause at play. You walk by, December seems like May. Heaven is right here and not above when you walk by, my love.
Thank you. That was very nice, Danny.
Oh, say, Fred, excuse me. Did you drop this cigar out of your pocket?
Oh, the cigar? Yes, thanks, Larry. Say, I'm glad you found it. This is an exploding cigar.
An exploding cigar?
Yes, I've got a little score to even with Jimmy Wallington, you see. Mm-hmm. So I went to Al Goodman's brother-in-law, and I bought this El Bango. Now, I'm going to give it to Jimmy right now. You stick around. You'll see that mustache of his hit the ceiling. Say, Jimmy.
Yes, want me, friend?
Yes, James, old boy. Here, my friend, have a cigar.
Gee, thanks, Fred. Say, this looks like an expensive one.
Oh, yes, Jimmy. Cigars like this are going up every day. Put it in your mouth. I'll light it for you.
Thanks, Fred. Say, this tastes pretty good.
Take a good deep drag, Jimmy. You'll get a big bang out of it.
Oh, yeah? Well, for your information, Fred, this cigar won't explode.
Why, Jimmy, how did you know...
Well, I overheard what you said to Larry Elliott.
Oh, shucks. But how did you know it wouldn't explode?
Didn't you say you bought it from Al's brother-in-law? Well, he sold you a dud. Thanks for the smoke and the object lesson.
What object lesson?
Well, an exploding cigar that won't explode is a dud, Fred. Just like the duds in gasoline, those useless slow-action elements that won't go off. And duds are not only a drag on your engine these cold mornings, they can be a drain on your battery, too. Remember, for a quick start, you depend on just a few ounces of chilled gasoline in your carburetor. And in those few ounces, gasoline duds show up at their worst, because they won't vaporize readily, won't take the spark instantly. That's why duds are a cause of long, drawn-out starts and consequent battery trouble. But the duds are out of Texaco Fire Chief, removed by an important refining process. They're out so you can enjoy fast Fire Chief starts, quick pickup, and economical power. So next time, try a Texaco dealer and famous Fire Chief at regular gasoline prices. Remember, there's not a dud in a tank full.
Maestro Goodman and his zither ensemble have just come out even in a musical composition called Perfidia. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Mr. Allen, I think I've got it.
You've got what, Kenny?
I just wrote in from Tombstone Gulch. How's that?
Oh, no. No, you've got to put more feeling in it, Kenny.
Well, do you want the feeling as I'm writing in, or shall I start feeling around Tombstone Gulch?
Well, you've got to feel the whole thing, Kenny.
Okay, I'll keep rehearsing. I just wrote in from Tombstone Gulch with feeling.
Gosh, that kid's got me worried. I don't...
Something with Kenny is wrong?
Oh, no, no, it's nothing, Mr. Goodman. I just promised to put Kenny in the sketch tonight. Now I'm afraid he can't act.
I, Goodman, can help Kenny, maybe.
No, you keep away from Kenny. He's apt to catch a dialect if you...
I, Goodman, just from Tombstone Gulch, wrote in. I can show Kenny how to read it.
You are an actor?
By any chance, you are seeing years ago on a billboard the name Tomaszewski?
Tomaszewski? Why, certainly.
In English, it means Goodman.
Now, don't tell me that you were an actor in the old country.
For 5 years in Russia, Goodman is the matinee idol.
And then?
They are cutting out matinees. Goodman is just idle.
Well, you... you want more money now. You get applause on it. First thing you know, you give up music altogether. Well, you go over now and see. How did that line go again? I just from Tombstone Gulch. Could you read it over again to make sure?
I, Goodman, just strode in from Tombstone Gulch.
Well, you go over and show Kenny how to do it. What I go through on this program...
From Tombstone Gulch.
Pardon. Not you, too. What is this?
Well, I can say it better than Kenny.
Well, that still doesn't make it good.
Can I be in a sketch sometime?
Well, we'll see.
On Jack Benny's show, Mary's in everything.
Well, she's got something on Benny, you see. I lead a good, clean life.
And poor Dennis Day. Jack makes him see Love Thy Neighbor every day.
Why, Benny makes everybody on his program see his pictures every day.
It's compulsory?
Oh, yes. You know, when Benny makes a picture, he gets paid in tickets. And, of course, it's really a big due bill on the local Paramount. And he tears it up into little pieces that become tickets, you see. And he has this is all he gets for making the picture, these tickets. And he pays off his cast, you see, on the program in tickets. So where can Dennis go if he's using Paramount tickets for money?
To the Paramount.
Correct. Now, what about our guest tonight?
He's a smokestack watcher.
What is a smokestack watcher?
He's a man who watches smokestacks.
What kind of a profession is that?
You'll have to ask our guest. Mr. Allen, meet Mr. Patrick Brennan.
Well, good evening, Mr. Brennan. Good evening, Mr. Allen. Portland's explanation of your profession has left me a little bewildered, Mr. Brennan. Now, just what is it you do for a living?
I watch stacks. Mr. Adams?
You watch stacks. Well, I must say that is a most unusual occupation. May I ask what company employs you in this odd capacity?
I work for the Consolidated Edison Company of New York.
And you watch the stacks in case any smoke comes out?
That's right.
In other words, Mr. Brennan, you are in the coke and soot business. Tell me, what is your purpose in watching these stacks?
Well, Fred, if that smoke is coming out of the stacks, it means there is some trouble.
In other words, a certain amount of the company's coal is being wasted.
That's right.
Now, is there any other purpose served by your funnel kibitzing, Mr. Brennan?
Yes, it fulfills a public service.
In what way?
The New York air, for sanitary reasons, must be kept as free as possible from humidity.
A laudable crusade, Mr. Brennan, to keep the air free from impurities, and you certainly are right about the smoke content of New York air. If Santa Claus ever went down a chimney in New York, he'd come out looking like Rochester's father. But now, Mr. Brennan, I think folks might be interested in hearing what constitutes a day's work for a stack watcher. Would you mind if I took one of your days apart?
Not at all, Fred.
Fine. Now, you report for duty early in the morning. You station yourself in your tower opposite the plant. Now, what is your first move?
I start watching the stacks like this.
Good. Well, now, let's say the boiler rooms below are functioning perfectly. Nothing but a colorless vapor floats from the chimneys. No passé coal is on the wing. Things continue to run smoothly for an hour or two. Now, what do you do?
I just keep watching the stacks.
Well, doesn't this get monotonous after a while?
Not to me, Fred. It's my job.
Well, tell me, what happens if you see a little smoke start to seep from one of the funnels? Do you yell bingo and call it a day?
No, I press a button.
And what does that do?
It signals the engineer in the boiler room.
And after you press the button and the funnel stops ad-libbing, what do you do then, Mr. Brennan?
Nothing. I just keep watching the stacks.
But working on a job like yours hasn't given you a one-stack mind by any chance, has it?
No, Fred. We have four stacks at our plant.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. I underestimated the thing. Well, now, during an average 8-hour day, about how many times will you have to signal the engineer?
Maybe once or twice.
And what do you do the rest of the day, Mr. Brennan?
I just keep watching the stacks.
Well, Mr. Brennan, it's been very nice having you over. What MGM has done for Edison the boy and Edison the man, you have done tonight for Edison the company.
Thank you, Fred.
But before you go, I have a little job for you, if you care to undertake it.
Well, what kind of a job is it?
Well, as I understand it, Mr. Brennan, you are an authority on smoke of all kinds. No murky vapor is too thick for you to catalog. And so tomorrow night, I'd like to have you come with me as my guest and analyze some smoky air that should defy anything you have ever seen.
Where are you going?
To the opening of a new nightclub on 52nd Street.
No, thanks, but I'd rather keep watching my stacks.
And save the cover charge, eh?
Good night, Fred.
Good night, and thank you, Stacks, Mr. Patrick Brennan. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the Martins rehearse a number for their Roxy Theater debut tomorrow. It's called The Story of a Haunt.
Thank you. when he's sending. He goes to notes that horns will never play, but still he keeps on sending out of the world and far away. So if you hear a tune being sung, just like a life that's been ripped apart from way down deep in his soul and heart, it's that young man, young man, blowing his horn.
Is this Ed D. Martin singing Young Man?
Hey, with... hey, move over, brother. This is where I begin.
Well, who in the
world... Ladies and gentlemen, you are now listening to the voice of Swami Sam. Swami Sam, the smartest spiritualist, psychic, and soothsayer, this side of Siam.
Now, just a minute, Sam.
Quiet, Bud. You're interrupting my commercial.
What commercial?
Well, I'm advertising my fortune-telling service for motorists. For a small fee, me and the spirits will sit in your front seat and help you with your driving problem.
What driving problem?
Well, supposing your windshield gets so spotty you can't see through it. I gaze into my crystal ball, and I tell you what lies ahead. Now, if you worry about your antifreeze,
I'm sorry, Sam, but the motoring public isn't interested in your crystal gazing. And Jimmy Wallington here will tell you why. Tell Swami, Jimmy.
It's true that there are always a lot of little driving problems that crop up in winter weather. Windshields seem to be forever getting spotted and grimy. And there's that guessing, too, about the strength of your antifreeze. And perhaps that doubt in your mind about the battery. But you don't need a Swami. Just remember that it's no trouble at all for a Texaco dealer to take care of these things for you. Just drive in. A Texaco dealer will quickly clean the rear window as well as your windshield. He'll gladly test your radiator, tell you whether or not you need more antifreeze. He'll also check the battery and tires. Moreover, he's planned for your personal comfort, too, by providing a neat and tidy place in which to freshen up, identified by the green and white Texaco registered restroom sign. So stop in anytime. You're always welcome at a Texaco dealer. The Texaco Star Theater continues immediately after a short pause for your station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the question of the week. This is Mr. and Mrs. Average Man's Roundtable, where three persons selected from our studio audience are invited to give their opinions on a question that concerns some unimportant issue of the day. Fred takes his place at the roundtable, where he meets his fellow debaters for the first time. You ready, Fred?
Yes, I am, unfortunately for the world, Jimmy. Portland, will you kindly introduce our first guest?
Yes, Mr. Richard Rossback from New York City.
Well, good evening, Mr. Rossback.
Good evening.
May I ask your profession?
Well, I'm a statistician.
A statistician? And what, in any particular business, or just a statistician at large?
Well, I'm a statistician in the investment banking business.
Oh, and you're not an investment counselor by any chance, are you?
No, fortunately not.
You're not. But you are close enough to the investment business to know a little about money. Is that right?
Well, I don't know. In my...
A lot about a little money or a little about a lot of money?
Frankly, I find that I don't know much about anything after the administration gets through.
Well, of course, that is probably will be the end of us for all time at the old stand here. Well, that's only a personal opinion, Mr. Rossback, and we're just here at the little broken-down forum, and we are not big enough, really, to go into such weighty matters. I was going to ask you, though, in your remote connection with money, if you thought that money brought happiness, do you?
Well, I don't think that it's necessarily the case. I think that it can be helpful.
It can be helpful. I don't think that money brings happiness. Did you ever see an income tax collector laughing? I mean, it answers itself.
I've never seen one because I'm a statistician.
Oh, well, that is very good, Mr. Rossback. You can keep your chart clear until one shows up, which I'm sure one will shortly. And now, Portland.
Mrs. Stella Powers from New York City.
Good evening, Mrs. Powers.
Good evening. It's not Stella, but it's Bertine. I like it better.
Bertine?
Yes.
Well, you wouldn't care to appear semi-incognito on this program, would you?
No, not at all.
It's Mrs. Bertine Powers, is it? May I ask, are you in business here in New York?
No, not exactly in business, but I'm a seer.
A seer?
Yes. I have the developed faculty of looking into the records of life, and...
Really? You mean that you can tell, you can, as you sit there looking at me, you can read me?
Yes, I can.
Can you really?
Would you like to?
Well, you have my sympathy, Mrs. Powers. As you sit there, it must be pretty dull going for you.
Not at all.
But, I mean, you really can. You can tell people's futures and things like that.
Well, I can detect cause.
Oh, can you?
And effect.
Oh, well, I would like to speak to you briefly after the program, if you don't mind.
I'd like to get into a huddle.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Powers. And now, Portland.
Mr. Og Fitzgerald from Larchmont, New York.
Well, good evening, Mr. Fitzgerald.
Hello, Fred.
Is Og your right name?
Some people think it's a noise, but it's the name.
Oh. Og is an unusual name, isn't it?
That's my mother's maiden name.
Og. Her first name?
That's a Gaelic... No, that's family name.
Oh, a family name.
A Gaelic word meaning young or the younger.
Oh, I see. You're leading an Og's life and...
Yes.
Well, I'm sorry. I haven't haven't time to go into that, Mr. Fitzgerald.
That's a good thing, yeah.
Well, I mean it. I haven't opened the forum here for so many weeks. I don't know what's going on anymore. I used to be able to control the thing, but you, Mr. Fitzgerald, and Mr. Rossback, and Mrs. Powers under another name, the whole thing is mixed up tonight.
Well, we'll go right ahead then.
Yes, we will. There's not much left to go ahead on confidentially, but we'll go ahead part of the way. That seems to bring us to our question, and tonight we take up a bit of marital trivia that has caused a million squabbles in a million homes. In a recent divorce case, the wife said that all of the trouble had originally started at the breakfast table. The husband insisted on reading the morning paper during breakfast and ignoring his wife. Many wives I know resent this practice, and our simple question tonight is, do you think a husband should read the morning paper at the breakfast table, or should he lavish all of his attention on the bacon and eggs and his wife? Now, Mr. Rossback, are you married?
No, I'm not.
You aren't?
No.
Well, you wouldn't be of much use for our purposes right now, would you?
I don't think so.
But what do you think offhand, I mean, for the records? Do you think that a husband should read the morning paper at the breakfast table?
Well, it depends. If he's a Brooklyn Dodger fan, why, I'd say that he has a good cause.
Good cause. Again, in the winter, he wouldn't have any excuse at all, would he? I mean, that would only months that the Dodgers are in with R in them, he'd be all right. Well, how do you feel about it? How do you feel about it, Mrs. Powers? Do you think you're married, aren't you?
Yes.
Do you think the husband should be permitted to read the morning paper at the breakfast table?
No, I don't. I loathe it.
You do?
I certainly do.
You think the husband should give all of his attention to the wife, huh?
To the breakfast. And the wife.
In that order? Well, you have something there, Mrs. Powers. And Mr. Fitzgerald, are you married?
Yes, sir.
Do you read the morning paper at your breakfast table?
Well, being a newspaper man all my life, I would if I wasn't a mile from the station.
Oh, you use that mile to read and keep peace in the household, is that?
No, I get the paper when I get over to the train.
Oh, you don't get the paper while you're at the house?
No.
Well, I should imagine that would be a rather a dangerous practice, reading the morning paper. But apparently we're getting no place with our little forum here. I have 12 executives waving at me here that I'm already 17 minutes late. And after...
We have 18 minutes yet here.
Well, I know, but not for this. But... But not as the boulevard flies, Mr. Fitzgerald.
Those kind of flies, too.
Yeah, you are on the Fitzgerald time. We are on the Columbia Network, yeah. And they won't extend us that courtesy after a certain hour. And I have lost track of how our forum stands, but I do doubt that our discussion tonight will revolutionize the literary tendencies of a single husband at a breakfast table tomorrow morning. If the husband is boss, he'll continue to read his paper. If the wife is boss, he'll continue to go without his paper. And if the marriage is 50-50 as a 50-50 partnership, the husband will show up at breakfast with a tabloid so his wife can look over the top and at least see him as he reads. On this bewildering note, our meeting adjourns, and thank you all a lot for your kind Kenny Baker.
I just wrote in from Tombstone Gulch.
No, not yet. Not yet, Kenny. This is your song. What is it again?
Oh, Beautiful Dreamer.
Could we trouble you, Mr. Goodman?
Unto me, starlight and dewdrops are waiting for thee. Songs of the old world heard in the day, loved by the moonlight, have all passed away. Beautiful dreams. Queen of my song, list while I woo thee with soft melody. Gone are the cares of life's busy throng. Beautiful dreamer, awaken.
That's your cue, Larry Elliott. Now tell us about Sky Chief Gasoline.
Well, thank you, Fred. Ladies and gentlemen, Sky Chief is
Mr.
really...
Mr. Allen!
Now, Portland...
Oh, Mr. Allen!
Portland, please, you're interrupting Larry Elliott's dissertation here.
I know, but please don't let him talk about Sky Chief tonight, Mr. Allen. Mama's listening in.
Well, so what?
Mama's a daredevil. If she hears Mr. Elliott say...
Okay, mm-hmm.
Sky Chief makes driving seem like flying.
Oh, you think she'll...
Yes. Mama'll fill up her car with Sky Chief and start looping the loop over fences and things. And at her age, it just isn't right.
Now, wait, Portland. I wouldn't say that Sky Chief will have that effect. On the contrary, I believe it will make your mother a better, smoother driver.
But how could it do that? Mama's only been driving about 5
5 months.
Oh, it doesn't matter whether you've been driving a car for 5 months or 5 years. When you step on the starter, you're eager for a quick getaway, aren't you?
Yes.
Well, when you reach a steep hill, you wish you were over it, don't you?
Of course.
When you're in traffic, you don't like to shift, do you?
Of course not.
Well, that's why a different premium gasoline like Texaco Sky Chief can make your mental driving life easier and your performance as a driver smoother. And here's the reason. Texaco Sky Chief supplies you with flexible, surging power. Power that gives you satisfying takeoff, thrilling glides over the hills, real confidence in traffic. Yes, Sky Chief has a way of bringing out the finest performance in any car. Try it. It's your Texaco dealer's premium gasoline for those who want the best at the usual premium price.
And now the Texaco Workshop players, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, this battered little covey takes cognizance of the vogue that is sweeping radio at the moment. Tonight, they turn their artistic fluoroscope on the many programs that shower money on people in their studio audiences. You have all heard these philanthropic fiestas that clutter the networks. Whisk your dial to any number. What do you hear?
Hello? Hello? This is the Pot of Gold calling.
Basket Basket is on the air.
Double or nothing.
Take it or leave it.
Here's your money, Mr. Doak.
20 crisp new $1 bills go to.
50 crisp new bills go to.
1,000 crisp new bills go to.
Double or nothing.
Take it or leave it.
Double.
Nothing.
Take it.
Leave it.
Here's your money.
Money, 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 money.
Yes, folks, over your radio, an endless stream of dollars goes to others, not to you. Have you ever envied these lucky winners their good fortune? Well, don't, for winning quiz money seldom leads to happiness. To prove our point, we bring you a sketch tonight called All Is Not Gold That Glitters, or the True Story of Timken Slaw. Our hero, Timken Slaw, was a humble commuter from Nutley, New Jersey. For years, as he sped through the Holland Tunnel on the 7 a.m. bus and mulled over the quizzes he had been exposed to the night before, Timken secretly envied the lucky winners. He vowed that one day he, too, would be a quiz winner. And finally, 2 years later, his big moment arrived. And one cold winter's night, Timken Slaw found himself a contestant on Professor Diz's program. Trembling, he stepped up to the microphone and heard jolly old Professor Diz say...
And here's our next contestant. Is your name, please?
Timken Slaw. I'm from Nutley, New Jersey.
And what is your business, Mr. Slaw?
I'm a kite retailer.
You sell kites retail?
No. If the tail comes off your kite, I retail it.
Oh. I see. Well, here is your question, Mr. Slaw. Who is the only president of the United States ever to be elected for a third term?
President in third term? Gee, that's a sticker.
Oh, come, come, come. Come, Mr. Slaw, that's not too hard. I'll give you a hint. The initials are F.D. F.D.
Father Divine?
No. F.D.R. It's Franklin D.
Roosevelt.
That is correct. Absolutely correct. And for his brilliant answer to that difficult question, the makers of Minute Mom, the marmalade that moms in a minute, present Mr. Slaw with 2 shiny silver dollars.
Oh, gosh. $2. I did it. I did it.
Yes, Timken Slaw had did it. Clutching his newfound wealth to his little chicken breast, Timken reeled into an Orange Julius stand on Broadway. Here he toasted himself with a double Orange Julius straight. But as Timken sipped his yokel zombie and waited for the owl bus back to Nutley, word of his good fortune was spreading like wildfire through the town. Mr. Blab, the Nutley big mouth, said to his wife,
"Did you hear the news, Carrie? Timken Slaw won $10 on the radio."
2 minutes later, Mrs. Blab was on the phone calling Mrs. Dow.
"Did you hear the news, Sarah? Timken Slaw won $50 on the radio."
A man named Kelly overheard the call on his party line. A little later, Kelly walked into Nutley's leading saloon and yelled,
"Hey, did you hear the news, fellas? Timken Slaw won $200 on the radio."
Yes, and the news kept spreading until it reached Nutley's radio station. A few minutes later, over Nutley's powerful 75 water, came this message.
Flash! Nutley's leading citizen, Timken Slaw, has just won $500 on the radio in New York. Congratulations, Timken Slaw.
Meantime, totally unaware of the furor his prize-winning escapade had aroused, Timken Slaw, reeking of Orange Julius fumes, arrives home to be greeted by his wife.
Hello, Lydia.
Timken, you darling. I've been waiting for you.
What are all these bundles, Lydia?
A new fur coat for me, set of golf clubs for you, a new windbreaker for Grandma, and I made a down payment on a second-hand car.
But, Lydia, this extravagance, what does it mean?
Extravagance? Why, Timken, we still have $400 left. You won $1,000.
$1,000? I only won $2.
Timken Slaw, you're lying to me.
No, I'm not.
Oh, yes, you are. Now that you're rich, you want to throw me aside like an old union suit.
Oh, honestly. I only won $2. You can ask Professor Diz.
Don't lie, you gigolo. You're going to spend that money on another woman.
But I don't know any other woman, except Mama. Gee, Lydia.
Oh, don't worry. False, Timken. I won't stand in your way.
Lydia, take off your gaiters. Where are you going?
To the Goodwill Court. Goodbye.
But fortunately, Lydia never got to the Goodwill Court. Timken hurried after Lydia and intercepted her before she could even reach We the People. Domestic peace was finally restored, and the following morning, Timken caught the early bus and went to work as usual. He had just punched the time clock a nasty uppercut when the boss, Mr. Otis, sent for him. Timken sensed a raise, entered Mr. Otis's office.
You sent for me, boss?
Yes, Slaw. Before you get away, I want to say goodbye.
Goodbye? I'm not going anyplace, Mr. Otis.
Don't tell me you're going to keep working in this dump after winning $5,000.
Five? But, Mr. Otis, I only won $2.
All you rich are the same, hushing up your wealth.
No, honest.
Well, goodbye, Slaw.
You mean I'm fired?
Oh, pish tush, Slaw, not fired. You've merely outgrown the organization. Well, goodbye, Slaw. Drop me a postcard from Palm Beach.
Palm Beach? I can't even get back to Nutley.
And so our lucky quiz winner, jobless and frustrated, hitchhiked his forlorn way back to Nutley. As he wearily opened the front door of the modest Slaw home and wondered how he could break the sad news to his wife, Timken noticed a sinister fellow lurking in the foyer. As Timken closed the door, he addressed the sinister stranger.
Are you looking for someone, sir?
Is your name Timken Slaw?
Yes, sir.
I'm the income tax department.
The income tax?
Yeah, you won $50,000. Uncle Sam wants his cut.
$50,000? I only won $2.
Evading your income tax, eh? You're coming with me.
Coming where?
I'm taking you to hell.
Hal Ickey?
No, Alcatraz. Let's go.
For many months, Timken, the lucky quiz winner, languished in jail. Finally, his time served, the ball and chain were removed from Timken's leg, and he was free. As the next jailbird, Timken found himself wifeless, jobless, friendless, penniless, and alone. Sinking lower and lower, he cursed the $2 quiz prize that had started his downfall. One day, as Timken shuffled along the Bowery, in his tattered Norfolk jacket, wearing a brisk north wind for underwear, Timken saw a crowd of beaten men milling around the front of a cheap hotel. As Timken joined this mob of derelicts, a dapper gentleman in the center of the scum addressed him.
Hey, you, step in here, bum.
Who, me?
Yeah, what is your opinion of the world situation, trash?
I don't know. Not so good, I guess.
Splendid. Very well put, outcast. Our radio audience will get a kick out of your opinion.
Radio audience? Is this a broadcast?
This is the Vox Drop program, bum. We're broadcasting from Happy Hyman's Flophouse right now. What's your name, Fleabait?
Timken Slaw.
Ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience, for his brilliant answer to our Vox Drop question, Timken Slaw gets two shiny silver dollars.
Oh, no, not that. Anything but that.
A bum refusing money?
Well, I have my reasons, sir.
Quit kidding. You won these here 2 bucks? Here, I'll put them in your pocket.
Oh, no. Rather than that, I'll end it all.
Hey, come out of that shooting gallery. Put down that gun.
Goodbye, cruel world. Oh.
Hey, speak to me, bud. Speak to me. Why wouldn't you take the $2?
I'm not going through all that again. Better death than be a quiz winner.
Ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience, you have just heard this mysterious suicide. What is the motive back of it? Send in your answers to Vox Drop, folks. Join this exciting new Timken Slaw Murder Quiz. The person sending in the best answer will receive absolutely free 2 shiny silver dollars.
Thus, the fate of our lucky quiz winner, Timken Slaw. Even Timken's death started a new radio contest. The moral, ladies and gentlemen, is never envy the person you hear winning $2 on a radio quiz program. It's worth more than $2 to be seen in public with a master of ceremonies. The end. And now from Mr. Larry Elliott, a message of importance to the music lovers of this entire Western Hemisphere.
Each week, millions of radio listeners in the United States, Canada, and by shortwave to all of Latin America are guests of the Texas Company during the Saturday afternoon broadcast of the Metropolitan Opera Company. This week, you are invited to hear the 6th Saturday matinee of the season, Verdi's popular Il Trovatore, beloved for such favorite melodies as the Anvil Chorus and the Miserere. The Texas Company also invites you to enjoy, during intermissions, several interesting features, including the Opera Question Forum, with noted musical authorities, with Mr. Milton Cross as Master of Ceremonies, and curtain talks on Our American Way of Living by distinguished guest speakers. The broadcast is heard over another network of 208 stations this Saturday, January 11th. Consult your newspaper for time and station.
Well, thank you, Larry, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us tonight. And don't forget, next Wednesday evening, the Texaco Star Theater brings you skiing information.
When I feel myself falling on skis, what should I do?
Don't worry, lady, you'll do it.
Your song of the week. Well, wake up, John Charles. What about your song?
I ain't singing nothing on the radio till me lawyer gets here.
I understand. And our guest will be...
Nelson Eliscu, the dog caterer.
And music. This is Fred Allen saying goodnight for the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast. Good night. Thank you. Good night. Thank you.
This is Columbia Broadcasting System.